Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, contributing editor and film critic for Las Vegas Weekly. And joining me this week is Jeffrey K. Howard of VegasFilmCritic.com and KVBC Channel 3. Thanks for being here.
You didn't say Emmy Award winning.
Emmy Award winning.
Yes, two Emmys.
Wow, I have all right. Emmys. How long ago was that?
Thank you. Oh, the first one was for Toy Story 2, and the other one was for Lord of the Rings, The Last Lord of the Rings, so it's been a while.
Oh, okay. Well, it wasn't that long. At least it wasn't.
I just wanted to toot my own horn there, because it really is. It is an honor when they say to be nominated, because this is my 14th year, 10 years in television this year.
Yeah.
And they're right. I submit shows every year, two nominations, two wins in a decade, so it's not as easy as it sounds. You get this... You think, I think it's great, it should win, or even be nominated. Doesn't happen. I mean, it's rare that it happens, so it's all politics.
Right.
I don't return phone calls, as you know.
That.
So,
yes.
Where was the theme music? I didn't hear it.
Well, the theme music is added. If you're listening right now, you probably did hear it, but
yeah.
They're going to add that in post, you know, that's how those things work.
I don't know, post, what does that mean? You and your technical
talk. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's super technical as we sit here.
I went
here.
To the Greenspun School of Communication, so I don't know what post means. So.
Oh, ouch.
Actually, the new building I drove by there, I am so jealous. All you young kids out there that are going to UNLV and Greenspun Hall and all that, I am so jealous, because when I went there...
It was in a closet?
It was in the basement.
Did you have to walk uphill both ways in the snow to get there?
No, it was the Human Agonies Building, or the Humanities Building, as we called it. But it's the big building on the front of Maryland Parkway. It's actually a bomb shelter. That's why it's designed that way.
Yeah.
And UNLV TV, where I started, and the communication school and all that was in the basement, literally in the basement, where I did my TV shows and studied television production and editing. But we were using 70s technology. Now over there, Dan Grimes, my good engineer buddy over there, just keeps me updated on everything. And I used to look at the cam of the school being built, and just it was there for the groundbreaking, and they're really good about treating their alumni, letting them know what's going on with the school. And so real exciting thing. So if you guys are thinking of a career in communications and even to follow in Josh Bell's steps,
yes,
which I think he wears a size 5, so they're tiny steps.
Ooh.
But Greenspun, man, the opportunities now are incredible.
They're losing all their money at UNLV though, possibly. So
well, I didn't say it was all rosy.
Right.
I guess if you can afford to go, you can go study television and all that, but this is where you're going to end up, doing a podcast
in a TV
studio over here in Green Valley.
Wow, that's a glamorous place to end up.
It's a good plug, wasn't it?
That was excellent. I'm sure UNLV appreciates it.
Yes, you never leave Vegas.
Yeah. So let's talk about this week's movies, starting with Coraline.
You want to do the good one first? Okay.
Yeah, let's do the good one first. Why
you
not?
You saw Coraline, I hope, right?
Yes,
Okay.
Yeah. Well, that's why we're talking about it, because
okay.
We both saw it.
Well, I don't know if you did or not. So.
Yeah. No, and I liked it. I think this year so far has just been so dismal. I've seen so many bad movies, Paul Blart Mall Cop and New in Town.
I went out to see that after Super Bowl Sunday. I went to go see that because it was number one 2 weeks in a row on its way to $100 million.
I know. It's a huge hit.
And I like Kevin James. I like that. I saw the commercial, and I like that stupid kind of humor. I'm a Jerry Lewis fanatic and that kind of thing. So I thought, I got to go see this because it looks funny. Was I wrong?
You sure were.
Man, it was a diehard ripoff, literally.
And it wasn't funny.
No. The only time I laughed is when the air duct collapsed on that terrorist girl, the bank robber girl, and he had to pick up that woman unconscious. And he was literally trying to pick her up, hitting her head on the floor and the wall. That's the only time I laughed. Because it looked like he was really hurting her, that's why I was laughing. Like, this is hysterical, because he didn't. You could see in his face he couldn't lift this girl,
right?
And that had to be the first take. But man, that was bad. And
it was awful.
I wanted to leave, but I thought, this is the first movie I paid for in 10 years.
Paid to see that movie?
$12 or whatever it was.
Oh my god!
And it didn't get better. But I thought, I'm staying to the end. And
boy,
when it ended, it just ended abruptly. It was just very poorly done.
The whole thing was a disaster. And I don't understand how that movie is so popular. I mean, I know people like crappy movies, and when there's nothing else to see, maybe you just go because there's nothing else to do. But it's obviously got positive word of mouth, and people are maybe going to see it more than once. I mean, to make that much money and stay number one for 2 weeks in a row, something is appealing to people.
It just baffles me.
Nothing
competed with it, and the demographic for that, the kids, teenagers, college kids,
right.
It was just stupid,
It was
dumb enough
stupid.
For them just to, insanely stupid, just for them to laugh at his antics, you know? How he can do those somersaults, that wasn't a stunt double. I don't know how he could do that, because he looked like he was going to have a heart attack just about every scene.
You know, I would have liked it if he'd had a heart attack and the movie would have been over at that point. It was awful. So let's talk about something good. Coraline.
Neil Gaiman.
Which is, yes, based on a Neil Gaiman book. He wrote the book that the movie Stardust was based on.
Sandman series.
The Sandman comic book series.
I have in my
garage,
which I should dust off and look at again.
A very, very influential, well-known comic book writer, novelist, and screenwriter a bit. He also wrote the movie Mirror Mask, which was sort of a smaller indie thing a couple years ago. And this is based on a book of his. It's about a young girl named Coraline. Voiced by Dakota Fanning. This is a stop-motion animated film. And she moves to a spooky old house with her parents and discovers a secret passageway, you know, which you always find in a spooky old house.
That's true.
And leads to this sort of alternate world, which is also her house, but in which everything...
Parallel universe,
right. Exactly. And everything seems wonderful, and her parents are much more attentive, and they make her cupcakes. And
food is better in this world.
Exactly. Well, as it always is. But, of course, things turn out not to be as wonderful as they seem, and it's sinister, and some, you
know,
she
has
to escape.
When you get a perfect world, you have to give something up. And this time she had to give up her life essence, her soul.
Right. Well, yeah, it's just the life essence and the soul. It's really not a big deal.
But it's really creepy, too. Yeah.
It is really creepy. They do the alternate characters. They all have buttons for eyes, and they want to sew buttons onto Coraline's eyes for her to stay forever. And yeah, I thought that was what was really cool about this movie, is that it really was genuinely creepy. Like, it really draws you into the world that it creates. And even though it's for kids, it's a PG-rated film, but I think it creates that sense of genuine scares, especially as things get more and more sinister and the other mother, who is the sort of leader of this other world, is going after Coraline. And you really feel like a danger to it, and I thought that was really cool.
I you know, it's directed by Henry Selick, we have to mention.
Right,
he directed
yes.
The Night Before Christmas and the awful, awful Monkey Bone, if you ever saw that.
And James and the Giant Peach, which
and
is
James
really good.
Again,
yes.
Both Tim Burton collaborations, right. Which I think when you see him on his own, he really... I think he goes to extremes.
Yeah.
Even though Coraline was incredibly visually creative, dark, spooky, very Tim Burton-esque, but there wasn't much of a family appeal in Coraline as there was in James and the Giant Peach and Night Before Christmas. At times, I thought, this is way too dark for children.
I mean...
You know, I was getting freaked out at some of the things that was going on. It was getting esoterical, it was getting abstract, and it kind of lost sense of where it was going. It just became this, like, an LSD trip. I thought, if Tim Burton took acid. I did, I really... Because I'm like, you know, because I had the pleasure of doing the junket last week, and Neil Gaiman was there, and he was telling me that Henry Selick, that he would have to interpret his story. So if he says the mother changes shape and then just keeps going, he doesn't say anything specific. He left it up to Henry Selick to come up with it. So this mother, you know, turns into spiders, turns into, you know, really look like Cruella de Vil at one time,
right,
you know.
Right.
So all these different interpretations. I just thought it kind of got, in the beginning, it got to be a sweet little kind of offbeat, kind of creepy story. Then it got really off the wall. And I thought, this is going to lose a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I entirely agree. I think it did get definitely a lot darker. I really liked that about it. I mean, I didn't think it lost its way in terms of the story. I don't think it ever really becomes confusing or muddled or anything like that. I do think it's possible that younger kids may be a little scared. It might be a little too intense. But, I mean, I think it's a movie that absolutely, like, adults will enjoy. And I think any kid who has a bit of fortitude can go see this movie. I don't think it's family unfriendly in any way.
Well, no, you're getting me wrong. I absolutely adore the film.
Okay.
I did.
Okay.
But I'm just saying that I'm thinking outside the box as a critic, you know, the audience. I think that children, it's not, because it sells itself as a children's film.
Sure.
You know, a little girl going through the door in this magical world.
Right, right.
But it's really heavy. It's really dark at times.
It is.
Yeah. And, but let's talk about the animation. Absolutely.
Oh, the animation is amazing.
Unbelievable.
Yes,
and
yes.
This is stop motion, and it's also in 3D.
Saw
it in 3D, right?
Yes, we both saw it in 3D, yeah.
And it's not that 1950s 3D that you think of. It's a whole new technology. I think it's called 3D World or 3D Real.
Real D?
Real
D. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
One of those, yeah.
And it's amazing special effects in it.
Yeah.
But I love stop motion animation. It's a lost art, and Henry Selick said that originally that it was going to be a live action.
Right, right. They
and
had
I
to thought, pitch it that way.
Yeah, and I kept thinking, man, it would look like Beetlejuice, you know?
Right.
It's just, so I think that Tim Burton and Henry Selick and even Neil Gaiman just all are on the same level. You know,
yes.
They really have the same thinking. But I love the animation in it. So it was brilliant.
You know, the animation is great. And one of the things I liked about the 3D is that, I mean, to me, despite the fact that 3D is allegedly the future, or so says, you know, Jeffrey Katzenberg and James Cameron or whatever, I still find it incredibly gimmicky in movies like Beowulf or The Journey to the Center of the Earth or whatever. What I liked about this movie is that it was in 3D, but I never felt like they were doing something just for the sake of the 3D effect. That you could go see this in 2D and still have a perfectly right. enjoyable, really good time. I think the 3D looks cool, and if you can see it in 3D, definitely go check it out in 3D.
But they used to use 3D not through the entire film. It would be put your glasses on for certain sequences.
Right, right.
Because even with Coraline, I was with some, you know, brought some friends to see the film. Everyone had headaches at the end of the film.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that kind of ended up.
And people
up
were
with,
annoyed
yeah.
wearing them, you know.
Right. It is
so
irritating.
If it gave you a signal or something for the movie going experience to put them on for a 5-10 minute sequence, then you could take them back off. I think that would have been how they should have marketed or made the film. I don't like wearing those things all
yeah,
the way through.
I don't really like yeah. wearing them either, but I like the fact that you could, again, you could see it without the 3D here. It's just kind of like an enhancement. It's not like a necessity. I wouldn't understand going to see like Journey to the Center of the Earth without 3D because then there's nothing to it. I mean, the right. whole point of the movie is the silly little 3D moments right. of things that come out at
and
you.
And the studios are doing, it's all marketing. They're trying to give you a different experience to draw you into the theater.
Right.
You know,
you can pay more money. The tickets cost more, and obviously you can't have the 3D experience, you know, at your house, so you have to go out to the theater. And I understand the motivation behind that, but I think from an artistic standpoint, it's not really adding a whole lot to most of these movies. And I like the way that they didn't sort of give in to that marketing necessity here to make something that, you know, people will be like, wow, things are coming out at me or whatever. It's just a good movie in however many dimensions you want to see it in. And I thought that was cool. So I liked it a lot.
I have to mention Keith David because I think he's he plays the Black Cat. He's the voice of Spawn, one of the greatest fight sequences in any movie ever made. They last for 15
right.
minutes. He's one of my favorite actors. And,
yeah.
of course, Franks and Beans and, you know, Something About Mary.
Yeah.
And he has got the most unique voice next to James Earl Jones, I think.
Yeah.
And he does this really dark, raspy voice of a cat that's there to kind of guide Coraline along. In this alternate world and kind of looking out for her. And I just love it. Just, and he comes, he's not in it too much, but he just pops in every now and then. And it's fascinating. It really is. And also Ian McShane, we have to mention.
There's
a lot of great
voice
talent in this. Really, really good.
Don French and Jennifer Saunders,
who physically, you know, because, you know, Don French is a very large woman.
Yeah.
And they had their voices switched. So when you see them, she has a skinny body, you know, the elderly, the grandmother type
right.
ladies, and they have their voices switched what they actually look like in real life. So I thought it was a cute little kind of thing they did. Because I'm a big Vicar of Dibley fan.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Huge. So,
yeah, a lot of cool, I think, just a lot of good stuff going on in this movie. And it's great to see Henry Selick direct. I mean, this is his first movie in like 8 years. And
this took 5-6 years pre-production, 2.5 years of actual shooting. I think it was like 52 sound stages. I mean, there's a lot.
But
a lot of work went into this, and you can see it
absolutely.
All there.
Yeah, it's all there. It looks
wonderful.
If this
does not win Best Animated Feature next year, instead of just giving it to Pixar every year.
Well, we haven't seen what Pixar is going to do this year. Maybe that will be great. We shouldn't condemn it in advance.
We got Monsters vs. Aliens coming up. I don't know. But
that's not Pixar. That's.
But, but I'm just mean. Come on. I'm so tired of these computer-generated films. Here's something truly unique.
Sure. I think this movie is great, and I would be happy to see it win awards. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I gave it 3.5 stars out of 5. I don't know what you would give it, maybe out of 5 or out of 10 you prefer.
Oh, well, no, I give grades.
Give it.
Because everyone goes to school and knows A, B, C, D, and F.
Yeah.
You know, I would give it a high B. I really would. Yeah,
that's good. I mean, I think it's definitely, especially given what else is out there, the Paul Blarts and whatnot. And if you've seen sort of the Oscar nominees that are out right now, this is the one to check out this weekend. So speaking of awful movies that are being released in this time of year.
You're going to say it, aren't you?
I know Jeff is very unhappy to have sat through The Pink Panther 2, starring Steve Martin, reprising his role as Inspector Clouseau, of course, originally made famous by Peter Sellers, the bumbling French detective who protects the Pink Panther diamond. And you're a big Sellers fan and a big
Pink
Panther
fan. I'm a big Sellers
fan,
more so a big Blake Edwards fan.
Uh-huh.
You know, that was my generation growing up as a kid.
Yeah.
I saw The Pink Panther, one of the first ones, when I was about about 8-9 years old, downtown at the Guild Theater. It's been gone for years, but I remember seeing The Pink Panther. I think it was Pink Panther Strikes Again. That was the first one I ever saw in the theater. But yeah, this, I know it's a new generation. I know. But Steve Martin, you know the economy is getting really bad when Steve Martin is doing these roles, because I have so much respect for him.
Well, yeah.
Playwright, author.
Sure.
Incredible actor.
He's got a new album out of banjo music. He plays the banjo.
Does he really?
Yeah,
I know.
It's cool.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
his stand-up, he used to play the banjo and say, you know, I feel like we're at Shakey's, you know, and eating pizza. And I had the rare privilege of interviewing him probably, I think, three times.
Yeah.
And I would go in there thinking, because he's a wild and crazy guy, not that I have any disrespect for him, but I would go in thinking I had this high-energy interview. He is nothing like that.
Yeah.
He comes across as such an intellectual, soft-spoken, intimidated the hell out of me. I mean, he did the first time I went in there. And I, you know right away in 15, 30 seconds when you're in there talking to someone – how the pace is going to be and the mood, and I'm like, I am over my head here.
Yeah,
I really am. And I want to talk about Devin Dora Plaid, and he's talking about his art exhibit at the Bellagio, and I'm like, oh, brother. So I don't understand this choice. I really don't.
Well, I mean, he's done so many of these sort of like lazy family films. I mean, even in the last however many years, you know, the Cheaper by the Dozen movies.
He seems lost.
And he does. And every so often, then, he'll do something that it seems like he really is passionate about. You know, something like Shop Girl, something with intelligence, or even like Bowfinger, which is a comedy, but was a smart, clever comedy. So I don't know. Does he really need the money, or does he just want to work? You know, he's like Samuel L. Jackson. If somebody offers him a job, he'll take it.
Right.
I don't know. And in this, he's not only the star, but he's a co-screenwriter.
Yeah, he's got credit on there for writing.
He's got to be involved pretty heavily in the creation of this movie. So I'm
sure he had a lot of input, but I was surprised to see the supporting cast. I mean, we had a who's
amazing
who.
Supporting
Andy
cast.
Andy Garcia, the great Alfred Molina, one of my idols.
Right.
Jeremy Irons.
Lily Tomlin.
Lily Tomlin, who I was hoping that he would be possessed again and do kind of All of Me, and at least she could be inside him and do a French thing. I was like... And also, they're rehashing the same jokes from the first film, using hamburger again. And the great, great John Cleese just being reduced to this embarrassing chief inspector who was perfectly played by Herbert Lom in the originals, which you have not seen, right?
I know, that's true. It's
I forgot
very,
to
it's
bring them
shameful,
today.
Yes.
Next time I do the next podcast in the next 6 months when you invite me back one more time, you'll have seen them and we'll briefly touch on them. But
absolutely.
They're a different time. They had an adult edginess to them because they had a sex appeal to them.
Right.
And when you watch just one sequence with Peter Sellers, you're going to know this is what Inspector Clouseau is all about. And what Steve Martin does with the character is he makes him a little more intelligent than he's supposed to be. He actually can solve crimes and all that, while the original Peter Sellers didn't have that at all. It was all luck.
Right. You know? Clouseau is like a secret genius in this movie.
Yeah.
He figures everything out before everyone
at the very
does.
End,
yes,
too. It's like, wait a minute. He has all this light from above hits him, and it's almost like an Agatha Christie mystery. He gets everyone together and just reveals how he discovered everything in the last 5 minutes. And in between all that, folks, is just some of the most mind-numbing comedy sequences that are just not funny.
No.
But you know what? The audience is laughing. So I'm thinking to myself, am I just above this kind of movie now because I've seen it all, or it doesn't appeal to me anymore, or are these people just simpletons and just like a good laugh and they don't know better?
Well, I think it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, I think, you know, something like this, it self-selects, you know, if you showed this to a random cross-section of people, maybe there wouldn't be as much laughter because the people who go see this are people who like this sort of dumb humor.
Like my brother.
There you
who
go.
Repeat what's happening as he fell on that,
God,
that he fell
the
on
worst.
That car. These people next to me were describing after it happened, why they're laughing. And I was like, you got to be kidding
And I just don't understand. I mean, and that was the same kind of thing in Paul Blart, is that it's just this, like, really obvious, basic slapstick. And I, you know, I'm not a big fan of slapstick, but I think there is a way to do it, you know, in the sort of classic sense where it's silly, obviously, but there's some structure to a story. There's a character. And because you care about the character and you've gotten to know someone, then it's even funnier when you see their flaws or, you know, you see them getting into these ridiculous situations. So
there's nothing appealing about Clouseau's character in this.
No.
He's not warm. He's not sympathetic. He's not intelligent. It's just this paper mache of a ghost walking through this movie, while Peter Sellers had this bumbling kind of love about him because he thinks he's so important. He thinks he's so brilliant. Everywhere he goes, Chief Inspector Clouseau, you know, he always thinks that he's going to save the world. And when it happens, all by accident, you kind of feel glad for him because you don't want to disappoint him.
Right.
While Steve Martin does it, you just like, you know, I just want to slap that mustache off.
He just seems kind of smug.
Arrogant. And
yes,
just,
exactly.
You know, at least he's not trying to do a Peter Sellers. This is as far as Inspector Clouseau as the original you can get.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no, you know, and I know he's been compared to them. And I know he probably thinks, look, I'm going to do my own interpretation. So And is Blake Edwards still alive? I gotta.
We should have looked that
I gotta,
up before.
I gotta call him. Yeah.
Yeah. Give him a call.
How much are you getting? Because he created it. I'm sure you got a lot of money.
Yeah.
It, so.
Yeah. I'm sure.
But by the way, we have to say the greatest movie theme of all time.
And at least they do. They keep the theme and the animated
the
opening credits,
with the Pink Panther,
which are fun. And you know, I will have to say that in comparison to some of the awful movies that I've seen in the last month or so, this was. I felt like slightly more tolerable. I mean, I didn't really enjoy it. I wouldn't recommend seeing it. But at the same time, I wasn't like, you know, looking for the exit constantly as I was during like Paul Blart or New in Town.
I was.
I felt like...
I was at Paul Blart too. I was looking for the exit too.
Right. I mean, I felt like we were talking about, the whole... amazing cast, that those people are such professionals and they're so inherently watchable that even given this awful material, they can sort of make it
I saw them standing in
acceptable.
The room with nothing to do. I saw them all standing next to each other. There's not even a mystery to solve. They're trying to find a man who's robbing, what was it? What was his name? The Tornado.
Right, there you go.
He was, well, I remember that. he's robbing the great artifacts of the world and they put this dream team together led by Inspector Clouseau, the blind lead in the blind, and they're all standing around trying to deduce, you know, every crime scene. And most of the time, they're just standing around, you know, for the camera, you know, blocking. You see them all.
Right.
It just looks so phony and staged wasted.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely wasted. There could be more done with them. But when they get moments to, I mean, every time that John Cleese is there, I mean, he's still John Cleese. Yeah. You know, he's still, I'm glad to see John Cleese in this movie versus someone else.
One funny sequence I laughed is when they were in the mansion talking to Jeremy Irons and Clouseau was on the rooftop and on the hidden cameras you saw on the monitor.
Right.
That was funny.
And that almost has subtlety to it even because it's sort of in the background there as the other characters are talking and they're trying to block Jeremy Irons from seeing
that's
him.
Naked Gun kind of thing, you know?
Right. Well, I like the Naked Gun.
I do too. But I mean, there's almost every type of humor represented in this movie too. And I have to mention, he goes back to the first jokes ever made on film, the fire hose sequence, you know, with the hose being Keystone Cops, and also the cake in the face, the pie in the face.
Sure, but you know, I mean,
all three to see Al Molina, Andy Garcia, and Jean Reno all with cake.
You know, you see
the three cakes there, and you're going, oh my gosh, here we go. When is it going to happen? And they trip and in the cake.
But I mean, you could argue that it's sort of, you know, classical. It's retro.
I say it's desperate.
No, I agree. I'm not really trying to defend
this movie. I got it. Wait a minute. How about we do a cake in the face?
Yeah.
And I'm like, Steve, you're being paid $20 million.
Yeah, that was probably written into the script. That was his main rewrite, was the cake in the face on the script. No, I'm not trying to defend the movie. I just think it's not as bad as it could have been. I think that's my
assessment.
It's
bad and worse. I feel sorry for them because, you know, it's hard to write a movie like that where, you know, the sight gags. I mean, I sit around thinking, well, where would it go now? What would I do next?
Right.
You know, I always hear a review of the movie they made, not the one they could have made. And but I'm thinking it's not easy to come up with sight gags and jokes like that work that don't seem been used before. So they have a challenge ahead of them. But maybe you shouldn't even remake this kind of movie.
Well,
you know?
No, you probably shouldn't. But given that they're going to, and I think as I said to you after the screening, it's possible, maybe not that likely, but it's possible that the audience that's laughing at this movie will then see an old Peter Sellers Pink Panther movie and think, hey, you know what? I liked that one Pink Panther movie. Maybe I'll like this other Pink Panther movie, and it'll lead them to something actually worthwhile.
Well, tell your listeners to go out and rent them if they haven't seen them.
Yes, absolutely.
Buy them. You'll
want to
see them
that.
Watching over and over.
Please do that. And I too, will have to go out
and they're going
to
come in the mail for
you,
by the way.
Oh, all right.
You're
going
to get your own set.
Very nice.
That's our parting gift today.
Oh, it's right. Hey, I should have you on more often if I get parting gifts.
You should.
I think I give it 2 stars out of 5. I don't think it was as awful as some stuff I've seen recently, but I imagine you wouldn't be that generous.
I adore Steve Martin. His autographed picture is in my house, you know, from Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, and I feel bad. And just for the sake of him, I would give it a D.
Not enough? Well, that's very generous of you.
It's close to a failure. Yeah. I mean, it's like you said, it's semi-watchable, and because I laughed at the rooftop sequence with the TV, you know, I did have a good chuckle.
Gives it one little bump.
Gives it a bump up.
Yeah.
Same with Paul Blart. I had one good laugh, and it gave it a D. But
so,
you know what? You know, and I caught the first Pink Panther on cable by mistake, and I've watched it 3 or 4 times
through. The first Steve Martin one?
It was very watchable. That
really?
Was different.
Wow.
Yeah, I did. I thought it was kind of funny. And some of the gags that it was a little more edgier than this one. This one, they seem to really.
It's very family.
Yeah, very family.
Kids, yeah.
The first one wasn't. They cut out a lot of the sex appeal with the secretary. They had a relationship. You know,
right.
They kind of cut out some of the adult humor. And it really, like I said, cakes in the face and that kind of
stuff.
Right,
yeah. It's very simplistic.
Yeah, definitely. So which I guess if you have a family, that's what it's
sure,
called.
Whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
if you're an adult.
I would say go see Coraline instead, yes. You know, as long as your kids aren't easily traumatized.
is that your disclaimer?
Well, I mean, like you said, there's a bit of intensity to it.
I say 12 and older.
I think, you know, for certain kids, even younger than 12, it probably
would
be okay.
You think so?
Yeah, well, I'm not a parent, though, so what do I know?
You're right. They see worse.
So coming up on DVD this coming Tuesday, one thing that I want to recommend that kind of flopped at the box office, actually, and it seems almost anachronistic already in our current political climate with Obama in the White House, but Oliver Stone's W, which was his biopic of George W. Bush.
That didn't make the impact that Stone was looking for, did it?
No, it didn't. But I think as a movie, it's actually pretty well made. And one of the things that is interesting about it is that Stone obviously doesn't like George Bush, but he works, I think, pretty hard to give as even-handed a portrait as you could, sort of taking for granted that this guy didn't do a good job as president and he maybe wasn't the right person for the job, but trying to understand his motivations for the things that he did, how he got to where he was, the way he was influenced by his advisors, things like that. And Josh Brolin gives a really good performance as George W. Bush, where you almost sympathize with him, I think, by the end of the movie. And he's got his Oscar nomination for Milk, and he was fine in Milk, but I thought he was actually a lot better in this movie, and I think it deserved more attention than it got. So check it out on DVD if you get a chance. You know, it seems like sort of a relic already, but I think it's worth it's worth seeing.
Did you hear the open letter from Bush's daughters to the Obama kids?
Oh, I haven't. No.
Oh, yeah, you should look it up online. They wrote an open ed piece, you know, in the Times, telling the kids, you know, what to expect and how to prepare yourself for being, you know, the first 4 years in the White House. And I think it was I think NBC had them actually phone in and read it, and they did a little montage. It's really nice because it really humanizes George Bush, which I've never seen before.
Right.
Having his daughters saying, you know, don't ever forget that he's your father, and really some really sweet things that they said.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. Well, this movie too, I think it humanizes Bush as much as, I mean, you won't come out thinking like, oh, he was a great president, but you might have a better understanding of the things that he did. So I think it's worthwhile.
The origin of evil.
Exactly. So check that out on DVD and see Coraline this weekend, I think. We can agree on that.
Of course we can.
So Jeffrey K. Howard, thank you for joining me.
We're done.
Did you have any other things on your
agenda?
Can
I plug my website, or is that
against
the law?
Please, yeah, right, VegasFilmCritic.com.
I have interviews with Henry Selick, Dakota Fanning, and Terry Hatcher, and Neil Gaiman up on my website. And also, well, who cares about Hotel for Dogs? That's old.
Ooh, yeah, no, but that check those interviews, because it's a great movie.
Yeah, great interview with Henry Selick, you know, if you're a Nightmare Before Christmas fan. And it's just, I only get 5 minutes with these people, but you know what? It's good stuff. It really is. I'm really happy with it.
Cool,
so.
Awesome. Well,
thanks for having me, man.
Thanks for being here.
How do I get out of here? Which?
Well, we'll validate your parking after. All right, for Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell.
Josh Bell hates everything except me.